Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Welcome to this week's edition of the RTC Weekly Download, and I am Jim Dolan, your host. We're going back to the West, the Old West, that is, for two episodes, one, Gunsmoke, and the other, Frontier Gentlemen. Let's start off with Gunsmoke. This is called Try It, Didn't Like It, from 1958.
Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke. Starring William Conrad, the story of the violence that moved west with young America, and the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man, Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful and a little lonely.
Mr. Dillon, I bet this proves out to be the hottest day of the whole year.
Yeah, I think you're right, Chester.
I stuffed my hat full of grass, but the sun's still frying my brain.
Well, it won't take long now. The Cates Ranch is just over this ridge, isn't it, Hank?
Yeah. Sure, I'm sorry to bring you out in this weather, Marshal. Back home, we never bothered the law with something like this. Always settled it personal.
Yeah, it works out better this way, Hank.
Well, seeing how Grover Cates feels about me... I reckon you heard how it was with me and Alma before him and her got married.
Now you did the right thing coming to me with it, Hank.
I just thought it wouldn't happen again. I'd forget about it, Marshal, but it's the third time now. Doggone it, I can't afford that kind of a loss.
There's no reason why you should.
There's Kate over there by the bar, Mr. Dillon. Don't see the boy around nowhere, so.
Sure hate to have to do this.
You let me handle it. Hello, Grover.
How are you, Grover? What do you think you're doing here, Jurgen?
He's with me. I'm afraid it's not a social call this time, Grover. I got some business with your son.
Eddie?
Yeah. Is he here?
What kind of business can you have with a 12-year-old boy, Marshal?
Didn't you buy Eddie one of those light Winchester rifles a couple of years ago?
What if I did?
Yeah, it seems like he's been using that gun pretty freely. He's been shooting some of Hank's prized turkeys.
Who said so?
I seen him do it last time.
That's a lie.
You watch your tongue.
And you get off my property
right
now.
That's enough, both of you.
Marshal, there ain't a word of truth in it. My boy knows if he was to go do something like that, I'd will the daylights out of him.
I suppose we talk to him about it.
There's nothing to talk about. It's because some turkey farmer starts spreading lies around.
I'm a patient man, Grover, but you stop that talk about lying.
Then get off my property if you don't like it.
Easy now.
Grover? What's the matter?
Afternoon, Miss Cates.
Marshal? Hank?
Are you, Alma?
She's Mrs. Cates, turkey farmer, and don't you forget it. You go on back to the house, Alma. This don't concern you.
What do you mean? What is it, Marshal?
It seems young Eddie's been taking pot shots at Hank's turkeys.
There ain't no truth in it, Alma. Now, you stay out of it.
Grover, let's see what the boy has to say.
I ain't gonna have the law pushing my young'un around.
The law's not going to. I just want to talk to him. Now, where is he?
He ain't here. I sent him into town.
Grover, he...
Shut up.
I think maybe he came back without you knowing about it.
No, he didn't.
In fact, judging by the way that dog's sniffing around at the cracks, I think maybe he's right there inside the barn listening to us.
No, he ain't, I tell you.
Rover, this is a matter of law, not a personal argument. Now, you quit stalling around and you call him out. Gonna call your boy out, Grover?
I said he ain't in there.
All right. Eddie, come on out. I know you're in the barn there. I said come on out here.
I'm coming. Don't be too hard on him, Marshal.
He ain't done nothing, and the law is not gonna touch him.
You're the one that told him. You told him you see me there in the barn?
I didn't, Eddie.
You was going to, though, only Pa stopped you. You're always doing something to get me in trouble.
I just tried to be a good mother to you.
You ain't my mom. You're never going to be.
Eddie.
Me and Pa had it all right here before you come.
Now, wait a minute, Eddie. Seems to me you got yourself into trouble. You were listening in there. Now, what about those turkeys?
I don't know nothing about it.
You see what I told you?
Eddie, I seen you do it. I was walking back up the draw, I heard the shots, and then I seen you ride off on that pony of yours. And you had your rifle. If I hadn't have been afoot, I'd have chased you and caught you right then.
I ain't been near your place.
Eddie, why do you think Hank would tell a story like that if it wasn't true?
I don't know nothing about it, Marshal.
Well, I've known Hank now for quite a while, and I never knew him to lie before. Now, why do you suppose he'd start with you?
I told you, I don't know.
All right. Well, I guess I'll have to take you into town with us, Eddie.
You aiming to jail this boy just on somebody's say-so?
I'm not going to jail him, Grover. He can bunk in with Chester tonight, and we'll see what Judge Bent has to say about it in the morning.
You know why Juergen made up this story, don't you? It's because of Alma here.
Grover, please.
He never could stand it because she picked me instead of him. Now he's trying to hit back at the boy to get even.
All right, Grover, you've said enough. Come on, Eddie, let's get started.
I don't want to go to jail.
Well, if you didn't do it, Eddie, you got nothing to worry about.
He just made it up like Pa said.
Oh? Well, why would he do that?
I don't know. Unless it's because I seen him come here when Pa was away.
Eddie?
Sure, he come lots of times, and he must know that I seen him.
That's not true.
It is, too. That's why he's trying to get me out of the way, because he knows I seen him.
It's not true, Grover. I haven't seen Hank since before we got married.
Grover, that's a fact, and I'll swear to it on a Bible.
Eddie, was that true? What you said about him coming here?
Of course it was true, Pa.
All right, then. Juergen, you better start wearing your gun.
Good to see you.
Hello, Kitty. Doc.
Well, hello, Matt. Sit down. Have a beer with us.
Well, thank you.
Sam, bring Matt a glass of beer, will you?
Sure, Miss Kitty. I heard you threw the Cates boy in jail this afternoon, Matt.
You heard wrong, Doc. I got Chester keeping an eye on him, that's all.
Oh, I did hear wrong, man.
And I've been talking to Eddie most of the afternoon and evening, and either he's telling the truth or he's the best doggone liar I ever saw.
Hey, youngsters are sometimes.
Doc, I wonder if you'd come over in the morning and try to talk to him, huh?
Me? Well, I don't know anything about kids.
Well, you ought to, Doc. You've delivered plenty of them.
Yeah, but not when they're 12 years old.
Well, a doctor ought to know something about human nature.
So should a lawman. All right, then I'll talk to him, but I won't guarantee anything.
Yeah, here's your beer, Marshal.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Matt, Chester told me the boy says his stepmother's been seeing Hank Juergen at home while Grover's away.
Yeah, that's what's kicked up all the trouble.
Huh?
What do you think, Kitty? Alma worked here. You knew her.
I don't know, Matt. She and Hank were real close, and then she quit work suddenly and married Grover. Since then, I haven't heard anything.
Well, I can see Hank lying to protect Alma. And yet, Eddie swears that every word of his story is true, that he didn't kill those turkeys, and that he's seen Hank at the ranch. I don't know what to believe.
Wait a minute.
Huh?
How are you, Kitty?
Hello, Alma.
Doc. Marshall.
Here, Miss Gates.
It's the first time I've been in the Long Branch since I quit and got married.
Well, it hasn't changed much, Alma.
Lots of other things have, though.
Don't you want to sit down?
No, thanks. I don't have much time. Marshall, how's Eddie?
And he's still telling the same story, Miss Gates.
He ain't never liked me. Always talks about how much better everything was before his ma died. But I've tried. I've tried every way I know how to.
Well...
Marshall, I was wondering, could I go over to the jail with you and try talking to him myself? He don't know what he's done, Marshall. I left Grover out there at the place just sitting and drinking and staring at the wall. He won't say a word to me. Won't even look at me. Will you walk down with me?
Sure, all right. Come on, Miss Cates. Let's go talk to him.
I'm sorry, Mr. Dillon, but he still won't come out.
He won't.
I could have dragged him, but I didn't figure you'd want that.
No, you did right, Chester. I'll go back and try to talk to him.
He sure is a stubborn kid when he puts his mind to something.
Aren't you hungry, Eddie?
No.
You want to come up in the office with Chester and me?
Is she still there?
No. Your ma left. Crying.
She ain't my ma.
Oh, she's your stepma, though. That's the same thing. What? Why wouldn't you talk to her?
I don't ever want to see her again.
You know, Eddie, you said a pretty bad thing about her.
It's true.
Well, it may be so, but... Now, when a fellow says something like that about a woman, I think he ought to give her a chance to explain.
I don't want to see her.
Now, I can understand when a fellow's had a fine ma and he's lost her. It's kind of hard for him to get used to another woman trying to take her place, but he ought to try and not go around carrying a chip on his shoulder.
She hates me. She wants to turn proggy in me.
The thing is, though, that a story like that hurts more than just one person. Hurts your pa and Hank Jurgen. And you know something, in the end, it'll hurt you more than anybody else.
I told you I seen him lots of times.
I can understand, too, telling a lie to get out of trouble. I did that myself a few times when I was a boy. You know why I quit doing that?
Why?
Because I found out that it felt worse to go around knowing that I'd lied than I did to admit the truth and take my punishment.
I didn't lie.
Now, killing a neighbor's turkey's a bad thing, all right, and your pa might strap you for it, maybe give you extra chores to help pay for them, but... Well, that's not as bad as knowing every minute of the day that you've hurt three people without any cause. And you hurt yourself, too.
I said I wasn't lying.
Yeah. Well, in that case, you got nothing on your mind, so there's nothing to worry about, right?
Yeah.
You're still not hungry, huh?
No.
All right, then you better go to bed and get some sleep.
Marshall?
Yeah? Yeah, what is it, Eddie?
I shot them turkeys. And I didn't see Mr. Jurgen over at our place not once. I'm sorry. I knew Paul would be awful mad. I'm sorry, Marshall.
Oh, It's all right, Eddie. I'm just glad you told the truth.
Mr. Dillon?
Yeah, what is it, Chester?
Somebody just seen Grover Cates in town. He's drunk and he's looking for Hank.
What?
He says he's going to kill him. Neither one of them, Mr. Dillon.
Well, Hank Jerkin may not even be in town, Chester.
Well, Grover told somebody he'd stop at Hank's place and he wasn't home.
And I hope he's not. Wait a minute.
Hmm?
Over there in Delmonico's, there's Hank. Come on.
Well, he must not have heard Grover looking for him. Wouldn't he be sitting in there eating for peaceful life?
Yeah, I guess not.
Well, Marshal, we'll have yourself some supper.
Hank, we've been looking for you.
What for?
Because Cates is in town and he's looking for you, too.
Well, I figured he would. Sooner or later. I started wearing my gun.
And I guess it won't come to that now. The boy admitted that he was lying.
Well, I'm glad for Alma's sake. If I'd have known it was going to lead to what it did, Marshal, I'd have buried them dang turkeys and forgot about it.
Well, I'll talk to Grover, see if he's willing to make good for the law.
Hey!
Get away!
It's Cates. He's out there in the street.
Stay back, Chester.
Come on out, Jurgen. You ain't
appeared to. Give me your gun.
Oh, no, it's my fight, Marshal. I'm going outside.
Cates, what you doing?
Here, Chester, take his gun and keep him covered and don't let him move.
Mister?
Now, if you went out there, Hank, you wouldn't get a chance to talk to him. Now, you stay put. Robber, hold your fire. It's Matt Dillon.
Matter with Jurgen? You too scared? You stay out of this, Marshal. Between me and him. He's in there. I've seen him. Why won't he come out?
Because Chester's holding a gun on him. I'm going to take yours now.
Stay back, Marshal. My fight ain't with you.
You haven't got a fight. Your boy just admitted his whole story was a lie from start to finish.
You're making that
up. I'm not going to argue with you. Now give me that gun. Now you better start coming to your senses, Grover.
You're saying the boy made it all up about Hank and Alma?
Yeah. You're going over to the jail and talk to him. You better figure on paying for Joe's window there along with them turkeys.
I should have known the young'un was lying to get out of trouble.
Marshal?
No.
I heard the shot, Marshal. Was either of them... Oh. Grover.
Oh, there was no harm done in this case.
I came back to the jail and saw Eddie. He told me.
I reckon... We better go get him, Alma, and head on out to the place.
You go, Grover. I'm staying in town a while till I decide what I'm going to do.
Gonna do? Well, you're coming home. That's what you're going to do.
No, Grover. You believed what he said about me. Just somebody's word against me, and you believed it.
Alma.
I'm not going with you now. And maybe not ever. Have to study it out.
Now, wait a minute.
Good night, gentlemen.
Alma. Alma, you come back here. She can't do this to me, Marshal. She's my wife. She belongs at home. Marshal, you gotta help me.
I'm sorry, Grover. This is something the law's got nothing to do with. You're on your own.
And That's Gunsmoke in an episode titled Try It, Didn't Like It from 1958. We're still in the Old West, this time for an adventure with frontier gentlemen. This is called The Gold Digger, and it's from 1958 as well. Here we go.
In the Black Hills of Dakota Territory, I met a lovesick miner and got bitten by the gold bug.
Frontier gentlemen. Herewith an Englishman's account of life and death in the West. As a reporter for the London Times, he writes his colorful and unusual stories. But as a man with a gun, he lives and becomes a part of the violent years in the new territories. In just a moment, we will bring you this latest report from the frontier gentlemen. 7 nights a week on CBS Radio, most of these stations present The World Tonight. On The World Tonight, CBS newsmen broadcast direct from where the news is developing, along with well-detailed eyewitness reports on current events. The World Tonight brings you lively interviews with people in the news. When big things are happening in London, Moscow, Paris, Tokyo, or Rome, they're all within speaking distance on The World Tonight. Now, starring John Daner, this is the story of J.B. Kendall, Frontier Gentleman. The town of Deadwood is built between a canyon wall and a river. As with so many other products of a gold rush, it has attracted the best and the worst of humanity. The enticements being many and varied, from opium dens to gambling halls and saloons. Morning and night, the long main street fairly roars, and the sound carries many a mile into the Black Hills to be heard by some half-starved, grizzled prospector down on his luck. I had gone into the same hills in order to write my impressions of gold mining in this area. It was the evening of my second day when I wandered into the camp of two men. Their diggings were in a hillside a few yards from their fire.
Evening, mister.
Good evening.
Any luck?
No.
Had you grub?
Not yet,
Well, shake yourself. Ain't no fancy fixings. Got us some dough meat and splatter dabs, if that'll do you.
Well, it's very kind of you, but I don't want
to... Heck, ain't no trouble. Rest your saddle, mister.
Thank you.
This here gut robber, he's Frank Twist. I'm Charlie Longball.
J.B. Kendall.
Nice smart to know you.
May I contribute to the meal?
Sure. Oh, ain't got any sweetening, have you?
Yes. Jam, sugar.
Jam. Oh, jam, that'll go just fine on them splatter dabs.
See, we run out of sugar 3 weeks back. The belly wash this old woman makes. I've been putting raisins in it to get some taste out of it.
Here.
Oh, now that's mighty friendly, mister. Sure you can spare it.
Oh, yes.
Say, where you been prospecting, J.B.?
I'll tell you the truth, I haven't. I'm a writer, just moving around, looking for something to write about.
That's so. You hear that, Frank?
Yeah, ain't that something?
You ain't looking for gold at all?
If I found some, I wouldn't mind in the least. No, I'm not particularly searching for it.
I admire that. I surely do.
What about you fellows?
Ain't running more than $10 a ton right now. We figured to give it a couple of more days and then move on.
Of course, 10 ain't bad, but there's fellas cleaning up better than 50 a ton hereabouts. Don't pay to waste time on hungry ore.
You both miners?
Well, Frank is. Real old gristle heel. Ain't that right, Frank?
I allows it so.
Me? I was a cowpuncher driving cows up to Cheyenne from Fort Worth. Heard about the gold, come on over. Well, I see, that was a couple years back. Met up with Frank, we got to be partners, ain't that so, Frank?
Yeah, and mister, you ain't never seen such a greener in all your born days. First time you went to panning, I liked to die.
Oh?
And the young fool finds himself a piece of pyrite as big as your fist and thinks it's real gold. Gold, oh, well, he darn near drowned himself. You know, I pumped a gallon of water out of him.
That's a fact.
Oh, he learned better than after that, I tell you.
Oh, I did. Sure as your foot.
Hey, How long since you was down to Deadwood, mister?
2 days ago.
2 days? Mm-hmm. Say, you ever go to the Green Front down there?
The Green Front?
Yeah.
I don't think so, no.
Frankie's got a girl at the Green Front. Him and 100 other the boys.
Now you hobble that lip of yourn, Charlie. When I say I got a girl, that's what I say. Mary's the sweetest little long-haired partner a man could ever hope to have. And don't you forget it. Now you're getting my back up, Charlie Longball.
Ain't meaningful, Frank.
Ain't nothing funny about me and Mary. I aim to get hitched up with her one of these days as soon as I make a strike.
All right, Frank. Ain't nobody saying otherwise.
Yeah? Well, ain't better be. Well, I'm going to fetch some water in the creek. You watch that meat, Charlie, so she won't burn.
Sure, Frank, sure. Yeah, I should ought to know better by now.
I gather that Mary is rather a touchy subject.
J.B., if you never seen a man with a love colic, you have now. At Frank, I swear when he gets into Deadwood, he's courting that gal like she was the finest lady in the whole territory. Buying her candies, all kind of fripperies, I swear. It ain't I got nothing against a gal. She ain't no worse than most. But I sure do hate to see a man old enough to be her father, which, if you ask me, she never even knew. I sure do hate to see it.
Hate to see it?
Yeah, him making cow eyes and playing the fool over that painted cat. Why, she don't give no more than spit for him. It irks me good, I tell you.
Oh, well, it's hard to tell a man in love that he's making a fool of himself.
Now, that's a mouthful of truth, J.B. You know all she wants out of old Charlie. You know it's his money. If he ever gets any, she'll turn him high inside, too, before she's through with him. He won't have a tail feather left.
How old is he?
Frank?
Yeah.
Oh, 60 maybe. He never said. That's the trouble. Old Wrinklehorn thinks he's still a yearling.
Doesn't he know that she doesn't care about him?
Sure, he don't see nothing. She gives him one of them big-eyed skid grease smiles, he's a goner.
Well, I'm afraid there's not much you can do about it. And if you take my advice, Charlie, you'll just...
Charlie!
What?
Charlie!
What? What's the matter?
Charlie, here you, boy. Take a look. Take a look at this oil up them eyeballs of yourn and look.
Holy suffering bushes.
Let me see, mister, you ever see anything like that?
Where'd you find it, Frank? Where?
Boy, it's pure. It's like I never seen in my whole days. Pure gold, Charlie boy, it's pure gold.
Frank,
pure
gold. Frank, you old hooter, slow down before you bust a gut. Where'd you find it?
I'll show you. Down this side of the creek. I'll show you. Come on, it's worth millions, Charlie boy. Millions!
Right now, your GMC dealer is inviting every truck owner and every truck buyer to make his own value test. Compare what you get with what you pay for when you buy any truck on the market. Then see if you don't agree, a GMC wins on value. That a truck-built GMC gives you more for your money. Here's a sample of a real bargain. Your GMC dealer is ready to offer you a brand new 1958 GMC truck for stop-and-go delivery work, complete with package delivery body, at a price that's less than you'd have paid for this same vehicle a year ago. And here's another bargain. Today's brand new pickup with 22 extra quality features at no extra cost. Priced right down with the lowest. When it comes to trucks, remember GMC, the quality name in trucks, wins any price value showdown. See your GMC dealer now.
In the gathering twilight, we stumbled, raced down the slope toward the creek. Then a few yards from the bottom of the hill, Frank Twist stopped, put a shaking hand on an outcropping of rock, and we saw a newly hacked scar.
You ain't gonna believe neither one. You ain't gonna.
Frank, we've struck it. Look at there.
Mr. J.B. Kendall, you brung us luck. Big luck. Do you know what happened, you know? Oh, I was mad at you, real mad, Charlie boy. I was passing by this here ledge, and I give the bucket a good swing to help get rid of my froth. The bucket got caught on a crack and pulled loose, a piece of rock come out. But there weren't no rock, Charlie. It was gold. That piece of gold.
It was fabulous. I'd never have believed it if I hadn't...
Boys, we got to celebrate, that's what. Let's get on back to the camp.
Wait a minute, Frank. I want to hack me off another piece.
Well, go ahead. You too, Kendall. Go on.
No, wait. One moment. There's one thing, though. Is this yours? I mean, Is it part of your claim?
Well, sure it is, ain't it, Frank? Hey,
well, I reckon it is.
You reckon? Well, we paced it off, Frank. Up the diggings, don't it come down this far?
I don't rightly remember, Charlie, but let's see now. 200 yards south, 300 north. That's on Packsaddle Jack's diggings. 44 east, 44 west.
Frank, we panned downstream. We never made no claim here.
Well, we got to do it right now, right away, Charlie, quick.
Yeah, sure, Frank.
Kendall, you give us a hand. We'll cut you in for a share.
Oh, I'd be very happy
to. As soon as we get it staked out, me and Kendall go back to Deadwood and register. Now, you stay here to keep an eye out, Charlie.
Yeah, like you say, Frank, but suppose somebody else has already staked it.
We searched for some mark of ownership, a cairn of rocks, an old tin can, but in the darkness we could find nothing. Three of us staked out the area and then started for Deadwood, leaving Charlie seated at the campfire, a look of grim determination on his face, a shotgun across his knee. It was well past midnight when we arrived in Deadwood to register the claim, but the office was closed and wouldn't open until 6 in the morning.
Well, I sure do hate to let that claim sit like that with only the young feller up there.
There's no use worrying about it, Frank. You can't do anything until morning anyway.
Well, you're right, J.B. You're darn right. Tell you what, let's you and me celebrate. Drinks are on me. Bella Union's just down the way.
All right.
Oh, it's going to be a long night, but worth it, because in the morning, we're going to be millionaires.
The Bella Union was probably the most disreputable, lowest den of iniquity in all of Deadwood. Its whiskey was foul, and the beer served, I've heard best described by cowpunchers when speaking of shallow pools of water in which cattle had been standing, green, stagnant. The whiskey being the lesser of the evils, I nursed mine along, which is more than I can say for Frank Twist.
Give me another shot of that fine red disturbance, partner. I've got to settle the dust in my belly.
He had consumed three quarters of a bottle and seemed none the worse for it.
Woo! I got the water by the tail on a downhill drag.
At about 3 o'clock, my companion turned a somewhat reddened eye on me, hiccoughed, put his arm on my shoulder and said,
"You miserable-looking son of a gun. You're drunk."
I'm sorry.
What you need is a drink.
I have one. Thank you.
What I need is a drink.
In your hand, Frank.
Mary.
What?
Mary. Let's go see Sweet Mary down to the green front.
Well, now, don't you think perhaps we'd better wait until the office opens? Remember, the claim?
Oh, you gotta meet Mary. She and me and she. We're gonna do some rotten logging. Sweetest little gal in Deadwood. Marry her in the morning. Come on.
We made our way down the street to the green front. The saloon was a good deal quieter than the Bella Union, but for an entirely different reason. Several ladies of assorted ages and varying degrees of decay were present, and with them, seated drinking at tables, their consorts. Frank Twist dragged me across the room.
There she is! Mary! Mary!
Come on, Mary! Give us a kiss!
Boy, you wicked man!
Mister, you take your slimy hands off on that sweet, pure girl.
Come on, Frank. You don't want to...
Hey, there. It's old man Twist.
Yeah. Are you talking to me, you raunchy old son of a gun?
You heard?
Mary, hold my drink.
Sure, honey.
Now, forgive the intrusion, but my friend is rather drunk. He doesn't mean...
What do you mean, I don't mean?
Frank.
Mister, you got a mighty powerful whoop in that fist. I got a feeling you busted Porky Culligan's nose. He sure got a pretty color of blood, ain't he?
Frank.
He gave his head a hit on the table when Porky hit him.
Wake up.
He ain't gonna wake up for a while. You sit down and have a drink with me, stranger.
No, we don't want no trouble in here, mister.
Oh, there ain't no trouble, Horace. You go and take care of the customers. Bring the gentleman here a fresh glass. He wants to buy me a drink. Don't you, honey?
Well, I hadn't thought of it.
Hey! Who dropped this?
Now, if you don't mind, that belongs to my friend, Mr. Twiss.
Holy... Is that what I think it is?
Gold.
Holy... Where?
In the hills.
Sure, in the hills, but where?
Let me see.
Oh. Richest I seen since Darby Methwig's strike.
Mister, you and him. You and him, partners?
Yes.
Oh. Oh, Horace, get the gentleman some champagne. He don't want to drink none of that snake poison of yours.
Sure, hey, you bet.
Sit down, Mister. Honey. Sit down. Let that dear old man lay. We'll take care of him when he wakes up. Now, I want you to tell me all about yourself. Where'd you say you found the gold?
This fall, we're conducting one of the biggest talent searches in our history. We're trying to find the most gifted men available to run the country for us. We're looking for candidates who can guide us through the perilous days ahead with wisdom and candor. How do we find these talented men who will be our next congressmen, judges, governors, and mayors? Find out just what they believe in. After the eliminations in the primaries, we hold the finals of this great talent search in November. We are the judges, and our decision is final. But to vote, you must register first. Then, in the November elections, vote and pick a winner.
Miss, Mary, I never did learn her surname, draped herself around me like an anaconda. Every now and again, she patted my pocket to assure herself, I have no doubt, that the gold nugget was still there. There was nothing subtle about her. She came to the point with a minimum of preliminaries, and was, I think, quite surprised when I declined.
You married or something?
No.
Well, don't you want a wife? Don't you want a flock of kids?
At the moment, the furthest thing from my mind.
You like me?
I find you devastating.
You don't like me.
You shatter me.
Mr. Twist likes me. He loves me, he told me.
Yes, I know.
He'd marry me.
I suppose he would.
I always thought he was a funny old nose painter. Imagine him wanting to marry me.
It is hard to imagine.
Yeah, ain't it? May and December. Of course the old goat's got a lot of life left in him. But I think you're much nicer.
It's kind of you.
You don't like me. Have some more champagne.
Thank you.
How much you figure that strike of yours is worth?
Well, according to Frank, millions.
Would you like for me to sit in your lap?
No, thank you.
What's the matter? Don't you like women?
On the contrary, I'm very fond of them.
Oh, just me then, huh? I ain't your kind.
Mary, why do you want to marry me?
You got a gold mine, ain't you?
Yes.
Well?
Simple as that?
You got a better reason? I'd take care of you, woman things. You know, like your socks and all. Yeah, I guess maybe because I've been working in a place like this, I ain't the wife you'd be wanting. That it?
If I were in love with you, Mary, it wouldn't matter where you worked.
I'd like to find a man like you. Settle down. Wouldn't even have to have $1 million. Just enough, you know.
No, I think so. Oh, your erstwhile friend is coming, too.
Huh?
The gentleman with the wounded nose.
Porky, you better get out of here for... What's your name, sweetheart?
Kendall.
Before my fiancé, Mr. Kendall, let some more air out of you.
Hey. How come you didn't tell me you had a fiancé?
I don't have to tell a hill rat like you nothing.
He ain't going to talk like that if my claim turns out rich.
Rich? Culligan, you couldn't find enough pay dirt in your whole life to beat what Mr. Kendall's got right there in his pocket.
Oh? Say, you hit it hard?
I think so.
Well, now, I ain't a man to hold no grudge, pard. Just you put her there. Well,
As I reached out my hand, Porky Culligan hit me a beauty, and that was that. But a half an hour later, I woke up, my head pillowed in Mary's lap, an anxious Frank Twiss leaning over me, And behind him, the rodent-like features of Stoat, the green front proprietor.
Kendra, you all right? Kendra.
Oh,
sweetheart, I thought you was dead.
Mary.
So did I.
What call you got calling him sweetheart?
I can call him anything I want.
Colligan got your gold, mister. Took off out of here like he had a burr under his saddle.
With the gold?
Yeah.
Stole the nugget right out of your pocket. I tried to stop him.
No matter none, Kendall. There's plenty more where that come from.
Oh, well.
Maybe you better lie down for a while, honey, till you feel all right. You want to come to my room?
No, he don't want to come to your room. I'll take care of him. Come on, J.B. You better be getting along. We got business.
What about the champagne? You ain't paid for that yet.
Yes.
$100.
What are you, a road agent?
That's the price. Pay up.
Ain't I gonna see you again, Kendall?
It's doubtful, Mary.
How about you, Frank? You coming back when you're done with your business?
Well, I ain't so sure no more, Mary. Maybe you ain't exactly the kind of woman I'd want to be raising my kids.
How come? I thought you was sweet on me.
I was, but you're a fickle female woman, and I aim to do some better with my millions. Come on, let's go, Kendall.
We left the forlorn miss of the green front and walked down the street to the land office. Frank Twist was remarkably sober. We had an hour to wait until 6, and then the office opened. The agent took our claim and began to go through his files.
You know, I'm mighty glad I found out about that woman before it was too late, J.B.
Oh?
Yes, sir. I got you to thank for that. Why, sure. Only thing she was interested in was my money.
Yes, I rather gathered that impression myself.
A yowling and a screeching. Figured for a while you was dead. Right there with you ain't yet cold. She's asking me to marry her, and then you wake up and she starts calling you sweetheart.
Well, we're both to be congratulated, Frank. I'm still alive. You're still single.
Yeah. Say, sure it's taking that feller some time to check that claim.
Yeah, boys?
Oh, everything fine, huh?
Sure, but not for you, it ain't.
No. Not for us.
Unless you made a real big mistake when you staked it out, that claim's already spoke for.
It ain't. It can't be.
I'm sorry. It sure enough is. Yeah, let's see. The name of Culligan. Porky Culligan. He's legal owner. Yeah, what's the matter? You boys find some gold up there?
I went back with Frank Twist to his camp. Then with Charlie Longbaugh, we walked down to the creek and looked at the outcropping of gold. 2 days later, Culligan found it. And the day after that, he married Mary of the Green Front.
Frontier Gentlemen was written, produced, and directed by Anthony Ellis and stars John Daner as J.B. Kendall. Featured in the cast were Joseph Kearns, Harry Bartell, Virginia Gregg, Jack Moyles, and Jack Crucian. Join us again next week for another report from the Frontier Gentlemen. Bud Sewell speaking.
We have a few more minutes, and staying with our old Western theme, let's go out to the Diamond K Ranch for an episode of Tales of the Diamond K and Poison Gold.
Hello, folks. This is Ken Maynard and Tarzan, inviting you to join us here in the tack room of the Diamond K Ranch for another 15 minutes of adventure. You know, you'd be surprised at all the exciting stories I've heard during my travels with rodeos, circuses, Wild West shows, and even on location when I'm making motion pictures here in Hollywood. And the tack room is about the best place in the world to sit and visit. You know, sometimes it's the only home a cowboy ever had. Sort of a bunk room and a living room all rolled into one. And I'll tell you, it's a mighty cozy place for storytelling. So why don't you buckaroos, and Mom and Dad too, kind of relax there in the big easy chair, and I'll tell you a little yarn called Poison Gold.
From the tack room of Ken Maynard's Diamond K Ranch, we're bringing you stories of adventure, stories of circus life, fascinating transcribed tales of the Old West where cowboys still follow the cattle trails, stories of rodeos and parades, colorful legends of the red man, hidden gold and buried treasure. The exciting tales from the Diamond K are told by Hollywood's champion of Western stars, internationally famous Ken Maynard. Say, folks, when you meet a champion like Ken, you just know he's full of adventurous stories. Real life stories, too. But did you know Ken Maynard holds the world's championship for trick riding? And Ken's hunted for gold himself. Stunt ridden in the circus, made scores of movies in Hollywood, and so on. So naturally, his stories are just loaded with thrills. And kids, you can have some of those stories for your very own to hear anytime you want. I'm talking about Ken's exciting Diamond K album of phonograph records. And listen, these stories were made especially for you. Ken opens the stories with a personal message for you, and he'll call you by name like,
"Hello, George," or "John," or "Sally."
And Ken will speak right to you alone on your set of Diamond K records. Now, can you tie that, partner? No, sirree. And you can't beat the value either. Here's what you get. A beautiful record album with a thrilling picture of Ken and Tarzan on the front, and inside are four sides. Two complete Wild West stories that start out by Ken talking personally to you. The two big 8-inch unbreakable records are made of pure, expensive vinylite on standard 78 RPM speed to play on the regular, familiar kind of phonograph. And they have pictures of Ken and Tarzan on them, too. It's so easy to get a Diamond K record album. All you do is send your name and address to Records in care of this station and enclose a $1 bill. That's all. Just a $1 bill for ages of fun and enjoyment. Don't forget you can't buy these records in any store because Ken makes them just for you and he calls you by name right on the record. Now don't wait to get your Diamond K record album because the sooner you write, the sooner you get your personalized record album. So write now to Records in care of this station and enclose a $1 bill. Now let's hear the exciting story Ken has for us today.
Well, sir, gather around close, partners, because I got a story today that'll make the hair under your collar stand straight up and whistle. Of course, I wasn't there when it all happened, since it was a few years before my time. As a matter of fact, it was Big Jim Parsons that was telling me about it. Big Jim is one of the biggest ranchers in the entire West. Owns more acres of land in Arizona than just about any man alive today. My friendship with Big Jim goes back to the days a few years ago when we were shooting a picture down his ranch, but it wasn't until yesterday that Jim told me a tale that's one of the most unusual things I've ever heard. We were sitting right in the tack room, sort of shooting the breeze, when all of a sudden he turned to me and said, "Ken, how'd you like to hear a true story that not many people know?" Well, I've always been on the lookout for a good story to pass on my radio friends, and I told him there's nothing I'd like better. So he began. Seems as though it all started back in the hills of Arizona somewhere around the early 1900s. Prospecting for gold in that country had been off and on for quite a few years. Sometimes good, sometimes not so good. Many's a man who'd spent his last penny looking for gold, only to end up a broken old man with nothing to show for it. Many's a man who'd sacrificed most of his life trying to strike it rich, right there in them Arizona hills. Therefore, when a man has spent years and years in prospecting, when he was dirty and hungry, and the temperature was well over the 100 mark, he'd sometimes do things that he wouldn't have done under more normal conditions. Heading the gang of four such prospectors was a fellow known as Hard Rock George, as tough and ornery and critter as you'd ever want to run up against. Hard Rock and his men had only one thing on their minds: gold, gold, and more gold. And they had little patience with the 14-year-old orphan boy who did all the back-breaking, dirty work taking care of that gang. Big Jim Parsons turned his chair away from the window to escape the bright sun and continued on with his story. Seems that just as the men were about ready to give up, they ran across a vein of gold, a rich vein of gold. And, of course, they started working like madmen. Fortunately, or unfortunately, as you wish, a lone prospector who had given up the search himself came by a short time later and sold the four men all of his remaining provisions. The lone prospector turned out to be a very unscrupulous fellow named Blackie Ryan, who quickly sized up the situation at the camp and decided that Hard Rock and his men had really made a strike for themselves. Needless to say, he did or said nothing that would in any way let the others know he suspected their secret. But leaning against a huge rock at night, looking up at the milky sky,
Blackie Ryan conceived one of the most daring, underhanded schemes to ever come out of the West. And as he made his way out of the hills and across the desert the following day, he made up his mind that he would make it at all costs. After spending a week or so in old Tucson, Blackie made several purchases and headed back across the desert in the direction from which he had just come a few days earlier, making careful note of the water holes as he went along. Finally, he stopped and made camp near one of the small but well-located water holes. And there he stayed for the next 5 weeks, riding up to the ridge every morning and scanning the horizon for signs of the returning prospectors from the hills. Meanwhile, Hard Rock and his men had become more gold-mad with each sack they dug from the hills. And after working feverishly for many days, they finally reached the limit they could take out with them. Having decided that the boy could have none of the gold, and being afraid that he would tell others of the mine once they got back, Hard Rock and the others decided to tie him to a rock and leave him. This they did, despite the desperate pleadings of the poor boy. Then the four men started out of the hills and across the hot desert to Tucson, many, many miles away. Several nights later, just about dusk, after 5 weeks of patient waiting, Blackie Ryan, from his perch on the well-guarded ridge, finally saw four prospectors making their weary way. Without a second's hesitation, he raced back over the hills to the waterhole, jumped quickly from his horse, ripped open the two bags lying beside it, and dumped the contents into the waterhole. "What was in the bags?" I excitedly asked Parsons. "Ken," he said, "it was poison. Blackie Ryan had poisoned the waterhole." "Whew! Telling this story gets me so excited, I'm bone dry. Gotta have a drink of water. Now, while I'm cooling off here, let me interrupt the story just a second to tell you something I'm mighty proud of. Have you heard about my K-shirt? It's sort of like a T-shirt, you know, a real Western shirt that a friend of mine designed especially for me. It's comfortable cotton, about the color of desert, and with a flaming Diamond K brand centered on the front in sunset red. And it's got our pictures on it, too, Tarzan and me. Well, the kids in my neighborhood took a fancy to it and wanted one like it, so my friends made them up special. Kids said I ought to tell you all about it, so that's what I'm doing. If you figure you'd like to have a K-shirt like I wear when I'm practicing tricks and fooling around, you can get one if you want to drop me a note. Fella said he'd fix you up for only a dollar, and that surprised me. Just name your size, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, or 12. And if you want a K-shirt like mine, just send your name and address to K-shirt in care of this station and stick in one little old dollar bill. It's as easy as falling off a corral fence. Well, now let's see, where were we? Oh, yes, Blackie Ryan had just dumped the poison in the waterhole. Well, sir, after doing this, Blackie hightailed it over to his hideout, proceeded to watch the approaching prospectors with all the pleasure that a cat watches a mouse trapped in a corner. Of course, Hard Rock and his men were very thirsty after their hot day on the desert, and they made a beeline for the waterhole along with their mules and horses. Before the moon had risen, Hard Rock and his men and animals all lay stretched out by the waterhole, dead. Yep, the poison water had killed them all, much to the delight of Blackie Ryan, who had come from his hiding place and was already removing the gold from the backs of the mules. Part of it he would take back with him to Tucson, the rest he would bury until he could return and get it. So pleased was he over the clever way he had gotten his fortune, he could hardly sleep at all until the wee small hours of the morning. Soon as the first rays of sun hit the desert, he was up, full of nervous energy, gathering his things together, making ready to start for Tucson. After quickly burying the gold he couldn't take with him, he suddenly realized that his horse was gone. In the excitement of the previous night, he had forgotten to hobble him, but there was little need to be alarmed. He was a good horse and wouldn't stray far. And sure enough, he hadn't strayed far, just down to the waterhole, where he now lay dead with the others. First, Blackie couldn't believe his eyes. Then he became panic, and he realized that his own water supply would never last if he walked to Tucson. Blinded with tears of rage, he hastily buried the rest of his ill-gotten gold and set out across the desert. And there they found him several days later, not too far from the poison waterhole and the men who had died before him. What's that? Who found him? Why, it was a young boy from the camp who'd been left to die by the four prospectors. His pitiful screams for help had attracted the attention of an old miner not too far away after the others had gone. Of course, it didn't take long to figure out just exactly what had happened. Nor did it take him long to find the gold Blackie had so poorly buried in his rage. So grateful was the boy to the old man who saved his life that in addition to giving him half of the gold, he later showed him the location of the vein itself, and the two were partners from then on out, with the other man acting as legal guardian for the boy and his money till he was of age. Well, sir, after I'd heard the story from Big Jim Parsons, I was really right on the edge of my seat. "That sure was a dandy, Jim," I said. "And what a surprise ending." Jim leaned back in his chair and said, "Yes, Ken, but the biggest surprise to the story is this. I myself was a 14-year-old boy who nearly lost his life and later made a fortune."
Well, gosh, Ken, that was some story. You know, I could listen to that one again and again. And speaking of stories, kids, wouldn't you like to be able to hear some of Ken's famous stories whenever you want? Well, you can with Ken Maynard's exciting Diamond K album of Wild West records. You can play them again and again for yourself and for your friends. They're terrific stories, just packed full of excitement. And best of all, these Ken Maynard records are personalized, made just for you and you alone, with a message from Ken. Now, when you put the needle down on the record, the first thing you'll hear is,
"Hello, Teddy. Hello, Barbara."
Or whatever your name is. Ken will say hello to you personally and tell you some of his favorite stories. Remember, you get an album with two big 8-inch pure vinylite records inside that are unbreakable. They're made on standard 78 RPM speed to play on the regular kind of phonograph that everybody's used for years. Now, all you do to get a Diamond K album is send your name and address and just a $1 bill to Records in care of this station. Do it now, buckaroos, because the faster you write, the faster you'll get your album. Now, here's Ken to tell you about his next story.
Well, folks, it's time to bring our story roundup to a close. This is Ken Maynard and Tarzan. Closing up the tack room of the Diamond K Ranch till I see you next time, and I'll tell you the story called The Lake of Gold. We'll be looking for you, and in the meantime, get them $1 bills in the mail now for some real Western fun. One for the K shirt, and one for the Diamond K record album. So long now.
You've been listening to Tales from the Diamond K, told by Ken Maynard, internationally famous cowboy, stunt rider, and Hollywood's champion of Western stars. Tales from the Diamond K was transcribed and produced in Hollywood.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.